Sylvie. Okay, we left off yesterday. At the end of the period of the Gaonim, we pointed out that although things were beginning to change in the Jewish community, in terms of geographically, things are pretty much the same. That Babel was still basically the center, even though there were other communities that were beginning to crop up. So this changed radically after the period of the Gaonim, as we enter into the period of the Rishonim. The period of the Rishonim spanned from approximately the year 1000 till, it's always tough to know, you know, what point do you put an end on a period, an epoch in history, in Jewish history. You know, some people put the end of the period of the Rishonim at the time of the Shulchan Aruch, right? 1500, others put a little bit earlier than that. Once again, it's hard to know exactly where it ends, but pretty much everyone agrees that it begins around the year 1000, with basically the Rif and his generation, pretty much the beginning of the period of the Rishonim. In the period of the Rishonim, we find the development of the Torah Sheba Peh really taking, in a sense, three different tracks. We find three different approaches in terms of Torah literature that begins to show up at this time. So one is the more conventional literature that we had already seen earlier on in the period of the Gaonim. That's the ideas of Shalos and Tshuvos. I remember I already mentioned yesterday that it was common for far-flung Jewish communities to send Shalos to the Gaonim, to Piskei Halacha, in terms of Machshava, in terms of other things that were relevant and important to them. And this continued throughout the days of the Rishonim. So there was definitely a very strong Shalos and Tshuvos literature. Some of the famous Shalos and Tshuvos of the days of the Rishonim. Some of the more famous ones. Shalos Tshuvos HaRashba was probably the most of all the Rishonim. I think probably the Rashba wrote more Tshuvos than anybody else. Yeah, the Rosh wrote a whole series of Tshuvos. Rittenberg, we have published a series of Tshuvos. That was much later. We have the Rambam had a series of Tshuvos. So the idea of Shalos and Tshuvos was definitely a strong aspect of Torah Sheba Peh. But there were two other aspects of Torah Sheba Peh that were coming into play in the period of the Rishonim, and one was the concept of a Perush on the Gemara. It means already, as we had said, that just as the Mishnah had become the centralized text and everything was revolving around the Mishnah, so at the time of the Chassidus and Gemara, the Gemara became the centralized text and everything was revolving around the Gemara. So now in the days of the Rishonim, we had this in the days of the Gaonim also a little bit, but it really, really reached fruition in the days of the Rishonim, the idea of writing Perushim on the Gemara itself, running commentaries on the Gemara with both explaining the Gemara and asking questions on the Gemara, giving answers on the Gemara, but following the state of the Gemara itself.
You often see in Rishonim, like, let's say Rav Hai Gaon quoted, did the Gaonim general have a parish on it, or are they just what you've heard them say, or what I'm sharing?
You mean like when they quote from Rav Hai Gaon wrote some Svarim, he did write some Svarim and Tshuvos. Do we have a parish of Rav Hai running on the Gemara? I don't know whether we have. Some of the things about that, remember we said yesterday that there were people from different Jewish communities who would go to Babel to learn about the Gaonim, and they would come back to their communities with notes and both written and Baal Peh, things that they had heard from the Gaonim. So that was already taking place in the days of the Rishonim as well. So again, so the idea of writing a Perush in the Gemara became a very popular way of continuing Torah Sheba Peh. And of course, the Perush par excellence, of course, is
Rashi.
Obviously Perush Rashi. But Rashi, we shouldn't understand Rashi's Perush in a vacuum. Rashi was drawing upon Perushim already from his Rebbeim, already previous Perushim. Rashi perfected that. Rashi put together the ultimate Perush in the Gemara. And then, of course, many other Rishonim continued where Rashi left off. The Baal Yad Tosfos and the Ramban and the Rashba and the Ritva and the Ran and many, many other people who continued writing Perushim running along the side of the Gemara. Then you had the third type of Torah literature that's had already also begun a little bit in the days of the Gaonim, but really reached fruition in the days of the Rishonim, and that's the idea of writing a Sefer Halacha. Namely, rather than going al Seidah Gemara, or rather than just answering haphazard question, sporadic questions here and there, so there was an idea of organizing halacha into a unit, into a sefer halacha, and there were many, many sefer halacha that were written. Of course, the most famous one, the most popular one, which Adi Yom Hazez is still the most popular, is of course the Rambam, the Rambam's Mishneh Torah. But again, the Rambam wasn't the only one, he was just the one that became very, very popular. So in terms of the proliferation of Torah Shabbat, we feel that these three different venues are now reaching fruition in the days of the Rishonim. So let's just understand a little bit about just who some of the major players in the Rishonim were, the different Derachim in terms of learning in the days of the Rishonim. And in order to understand some of it, we just have to get just a little bit of a background, just historically, to know where these events are taking place and what else is going on in the world at the time that these events are taking place. So in the days of the Rishonim, you already have those Jewish communities that we mentioned yesterday really begin to come into their own, they really begin to mature. And now you have a full-fledged Torah community already functioning primarily in Germany at the time of the early Rishonim, a Torah community in the cities of Germany. What are the three famous cities of Germany? Anybody know the three famous cities of Germany in the days of Rishonim?
That was
a city later. I'm not sure it was one of the famous.
Worms,
right? Vermeiza, right? Worms. Who came from Worms?
Rashi.
Rashi, right? Rashi is from Rashi. Rashi. He learned in Worms. He didn't come from Worms, but he learned in Worms. Anyone know the other ones? The two other famous ones. What? Spire, right? Ashpira, the Hebrew name was Ashpira. And the third was?
Troy.
Was his friends. Troy was in France. Was Mainz. Mainz or Magentia in Hebrew. So the three kehilos in English were Worms, Mainz, and Spire. And in Hebrew they're known as the kehilos Shum, Shashpera, Vermeiza, and Magentia. We mentioned these three kehilos. These were the three kehilos of German Jewry at the time, which again, as we mentioned yesterday, most of our great, I would venture to say that probably any Ashkenazi in this room right now had a great grandparent, at least one, if not many of them, who lived in one of these three cities. So, when do we mention these three cities? Anybody know in a very tragic sense?
Yes,
in Kinnos. One of the Kinnos on Tisha B'Av describes the destruction of these cities at the time of the Crusades. So the Jewish communities in Germany, this was really what the Torah was in terms of what became later known as Ashkenaz. Ashkenaz is the Hebrew word for Germany, so it became known as the Ashkenazi communities, where really the foundation was in Germany. A little bit later, so the shift began to move not as much to Germany, but more to France. And this was mostly because of Rashi. Rashi had learned in Germany. That's where all the yeshivas were in Germany. There was very little in terms of formal yeshivas in France at the time when Rashi was young. But Rashi moved back to France, had a thriving family wine business. So Rashi, I guess in France, that's a good business to be in. So Rashi lived most of his life in France and started to teach in France, and Tamidim started to flock to Rashi in France. And the Mela Rashi turned France into becoming the Torah center. So we usually view Germany and France as pretty much the same. We call them Chachmei Ashkenaz, both France and Germany. Technically the Chachmei Tzarpas, the Chachmei Ashkenaz, but in terms of tradition, in terms of Mesorah of learning, they're pretty much the same. So of course the major players in this Torah school of Chachmei Ashkenaz or Tzarpas are Rashi first and foremost. Who are some of the other major players? So the Bali Atosos, Rashi's immediate, many of them being his grandchildren, and then other Tamidim of his, and Tamidim of is. So some of the major players in the Bali Atosfos were talking about 1, 2, 3, 4 generations after Rashi. You're talking about the Rashbam, you're talking about the Rabbeinu Tam. The Rabbeinu Tam's nephew was the Ri, and then the Ri's Tam was the Rash, the Rashbi Shans. And he had all the other Bali Atosfos. Again, those are just some of the highlight names of the Bali Atosfos. The Bali Atosfos, even though they lived primarily in France and Germany, there were Bali Atosfos in other parts of Europe as well. There were even some Bali Atosfos in England. One of the Bali Atosfos of Rabbeinu Yomtif was the Rav in what city?
London,
in the other place which is a big Jewish community, in York, in Old York. So there was a significant Jewish community. Rabbeinu Yomtif was the Rav there, and unfortunately the Jewish community of York suffered a terrible tragedy during one of the Crusades, that the pogroms, whatever it was, the Jewish community of York was mamish massacred, it was mamish wiped out. There's a famous story, and Michal Achtela has it in one of his books, a famous story about the massacre of the Jews in York. You know the story?
Yeah.
There's a famous maisa that happened not that long ago, that there was apparently a yeshiva bach who was going on from Gates out of Manchester. Someone was going on a train, and his train stopped in York, and so he got out, and now there's hasn't been a Jewish community in York in 800 years, and apparently he was just sitting and waiting for another train or something, and he saw there was some construction going on. He was just went to go watch what was happening, and as he was there, apparently some of the construction workers stopped, because they had just bumped into bones. Probably where they had been digging buildings, so there were some bones of some ancient burial ground from somewhere. So I don't know if it's Gagal or Dvarim, that some research was done on the bones, and apparently they came to the conclusion, at least some historians came to the conclusions, that these were actually the remains of the Jewish community of York that had been massacred hundreds of years earlier. Apparently the way the story goes, again, I don't know whether this story has been verified or this is only a legend, but apparently the way the story goes is that there was a large church overlooking this area, and apparently after they verified that these bones were they suspected these bones were part of the Jewish community, so they had a whole funeral, they had a whole tekas, I think the Chief Rabbi of England came, they had a whole burial ceremony of these bones, the chavah, these remains of the Maestim of the Kedoshim of York from hundreds of years ago. And apparently the day of the funeral, so right after the funeral, apparently there was a thunderstorm, and a bolt of lightning hit the church, and put the church on fire or something. They said that was the nekama that these bones had 800 years later. Again, I wasn't there, I can't tell you for sure. That's the way the story goes. Anyway, there were Bali Atos who lived as far as England, there were Bali Atos in France and Germany and other parts of Europe as well. So this is really one Torah school, the Torah school of the Chachmei Ashkenaz, the Chachmei Tzarfas, and their greatest legacy that they gave us was of course Rashi and all the Bali Atosis. Then you had a very, very different Jewish community in a different part of Europe, which had different personalities, and that was the Chachmei Svara. And here already, there are already very real differences in terms of Derech HaLimud, in terms of Minhagim between the Spanish communities and the Ashkenaz communities. So the Chachmei Svarad, as we already mentioned, the Jewish community in Spain was already several hundred years old, but it's really come to its own self during this period of time. And then you have some major, major players who are some of the great names of the Chachmei Svarad, who are familiar with. You have the Rambam at one point. The Rambam was born in Spain, but the bulk of his life wasn't really in Spain.
His father.
Some of the major contributors we have to the Chachmei Svarad. Sounds much, much later. Was not from Spain, but much, much later. The Rif was from North Africa.
Barbanel
was the very end of Spain, very end of Spanish Jewry. The Ramban, for the bulk of his life, until he was 70 years old, until he was thrown out of Spain by the king for winning the debate. In those years, there was a practice that the church would always sponsor these debates between the Rabbanim and the priests. So, the Ramban had the famous debate, the Mikroch Ramban. So there was the Ramban. So the Ramban won the debate, and as a reward for winning the debate, so the king of Spain told him that rather than killing him, he's just going to throw him into exile. So he threw him out of Spain. At the age of 70 years old, the Ramban left Spain and found his way to Eretz Yisrael. And it's interesting, when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he wrote a letter. Bigeres Ramban, he wrote back to his son, he wrote a letter, but then he also describes what life was like in Eretz Yisrael in those years when he arrived. So he comes to Yerushalayim, and there was no minyan. There was not a minyan. I don't mean there was no minyan at 2 o'clock in the morning in Gula. There was no minyan. There weren't a minyan of 10 men, Jewish men who lived in Yerushalayim at that time. So apparently they bust in a ship of people for him to make a minyan for Rosh Hashanah. He came and finally read for Rosh Hashanah. So they brought some Jews from Shechem, Chevron, or some other neighboring Jewish community in order to make a minyan. So it should give you just the idea of what a churban looked like in the Middle Ages. So the Ramban was a major player in Spain, the Rashba was a major player in Spain, the Ritva, the Ran, the whole school of thought, all the whole Rishonim, they were all from the Gedolei Svarad. The Jewish community in Spain was very, very different than the Jewish community in Ashkenaz, and it had implications in terms of the development of the Torah Shabbat Peh, in terms of the Derech HaLimud, in terms of the things that they were interested in, and a lot of the differences revolved around the fact that the outside culture was very different also, that the outside culture in Ashkenaz and Tzarfas was very, very bleak. It was the time, really the end of the period of the Dark Ages in Europe. There was nothing going on in terms of culture, in terms of anything secularly enticing. The only thing that was happening besides people killing each other was that the church was strong. That Christianity had a very strong hold on the people. And Christianity in those years was not very favorable to Klal Yisrael. There were crusades and there were persecutions and there were always problems. The period of the Bali Apelisis was a very, very difficult period in terms of historically for the Jewish people, notwithstanding the great advance in the Tarshish Vapeh, but in terms of just physically, in terms of physical safety, things were very, 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 very difficult. Economically, things were bad. Physically, things were bad. Security, things, everything was just not a good scene in those couple of hundreds of years in France and Germany. And as such, there was really very little secular culture that had any interest. The Jews were not interested in the church's culture, and there was nothing else besides the church. Whereas in Spain, it was a whole different ballgame. In Spain, so first of all, Spain was not under the Christians at the time. It only became under the Christians a little bit later. Right? The Prince of Ramban already became under the rule of the Christians. But there was for a long period of time, Spain was under the control of the Muslims. And as strange as it may sound, light of today's world, and that period of time, the relationship between the Jews and the Muslims was fairly good, especially
into what? Aren't
we
like their money lenders?
No, that was in Europe. They were more the money lenders, but in Spain, so this is what's called the Golden Age of Spain. That the Jews were well off. They were in high positions in the government. They were economically prosperous. They were intellectually prosperous. Things were very good, at least from a Gashmistic point of view. You know, if we want to look for parallels to the status of the Jewish community in America today, so usually we look to Spain. That things haven't been as good, probably physically, for the Jewish community as they are in America today. Probably have not been as good since Spain 700 years ago, which, as nice as that may sound, should also give us a little bit of a shake, because although things were very, very good for a couple hundred years for the Jews of Spain, there was a tragic ending for the Jews of Spain, namely when the Muslims were basically defeated by the Christians, and then the rules of the of expulsion and inquisition began in 1492, when the entire Jewish community was basically decimated, was thrown out of Spain. So we should always, we shouldn't rest in our laurels and gallows. That I'm not an alarmist. It's not, whatever. I'm just saying that the gallows never has. There's no promises, no guarantees in gallows. Anyway, so getting back to the story. So that's what we find, that a lot of the great Talmid Chachamim in Spain were involved in other aspects of knowledge much, much more than their Ashkenazi counterparts were. That we don't find in the Rashi and the Bali HaTosis very much outside study, any much secular study. There was no secular study. There was nothing there. There was nothing that was worth studying in France and Germany in the 1100s. Whereas in Spain, we find that many of the Jews were involved in what we call today secular studies. The Jews were involved in math, and they were involved in poetry, and they were involved in philosophy. And this became a major issue amongst the Rabbanim in Spain as to how to deal with this. Again, just as in the world today, you have different opinions amongst the Rabbanim as to the role of secular studies. So you had similar issues and similar controversies in Spain as well. To such a point that there were some individuals who were even very, very upset at the Rambam. Now, we know the Rambam was, besides being the Gadol Hador in terms of Chokhmas HaTorah, the Rambam also wrote the Maror Nevuchim, and the Rambam was a doctor, the Rambam was a philosopher, the Rambam had was the highest level of secular knowledge as well as Torah knowledge. And we find that there were people who were in fact upset at the Rambam. We find there was even a tragedy of tragedies that the Rambam, some of the Rambam's books were burned because they felt that the Rambam was too influenced by Aristotle. They felt that his books were detrimental. Rabbeinu Yonah writes that even though in his early years Rabbeinu Yonah was also not happy with some of the things that the Rambam wrote in terms of philosophy, Rabbeinu Yonah writes that he thinks that some of the terrible tragedies that befell the Jewish community later on were in direct response of that HaKadosh Baruch was punishing them for the disrespect that we showed to the Rambam. The specific event that Rabbeinu Yonah was referring to, anybody know?
Okay, burned 24.
The burning of the books, the wagons of the Gemara. Yeah. That in Paris there was a public burning of the Talmud, which was actually initiated by a Meshumad, by a Jew that converted to Christianity. who convinced the French authorities that the Gemara was terrible and should be destroyed, should be burned. And they destroyed 24 wagon loads of Gemaras and other Svarim, things from Rishon that were lost for us forever. And the Rabbi Yonah writes that he thinks that was because as a punishment to those who were involved in the burning of the Rambam Svarim. So again, so you had different, different types of Jewish communities that were developing, and this reflected itself in terms of the different types of Rabbanim you had. You had, the man such as Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra was a poet and a Mefarsh of Chumash, and that type of a personality so didn't really exist in France and Germany at the time. France and Germany was pretty much, Ibn Atam and the Rishbam writing places and reading Gemaras and Essen Kash and Terutzim. Pretty much secular knowledge wasn't really a major factor in Ashkenaz and Tzarfin at the time. So again, so you have these two major Jewish communities of Ashkenaz and the major Jewish community of Spain. Then you had other Jewish communities. You had Jewish community of North Africa. Now again, the Jewish community of North Africa, just geographically, is going to be somewhat connected. There are going to be links between the Jewish community of North Africa and the Jewish community of Spain, as we mentioned yesterday. Just the geography, they're just hop, skip, and a jump from each other.
Ashkenaz,
North Africans at this time, I don't think there was that much of a. Between Moroccans were North Africa.
Right.
So, so you had Jewish communities in North Africa, you had Jewish communities in Egypt and in Morocco and that whole area, and some of the big players, some of the big names, what are some of the big names, who knows? In North Africa, the biggest name is the Rif. His name is Yitzchak Alfasi. What is Alfasi?
Fez.
Right? Rabbi Chananel came from North Africa. Right? So he had a whole group of Talmidei Chachamim who came from North Africa. The Rif lived most of his life in North Africa. Then he had a run for his life. There were problems. The Jewish community had problems. And I said that the relationship between the Jews and the Muslims was fairly good during the Middle Ages. That was not always good, and there were not all Muslims were the same. There were different groups of Muslims, and there were problems in North Africa. The Rif had to flee also from North Africa. At the end of his life, he came to Spain, and he opened the yeshiva in Spain, and he had many Talmidim in Spain, and one of the most famous Talmidim was, anybody know? The Rima Gash. The Rima Gash was the Rambam's father's Rebbe. So the Rambam always considered himself as a Talmud of the Rif. The Rambam never saw the Rif. The Rambam, the Rif died before the Rambam was born. But the Rambam considered himself to be like a descendant of the Rif, in a sense, a spiritual descendant of the Rif, because he was a Talmud of his father, who was a Talmud of the Rima Gash. Even though the Rambam, it wasn't really a Talmud of the Rima Gash either. The Rambam was a little boy when the Rima Gash died. But the Rambam considered his Mesorah to be pretty much a Mesorah of the Rif. And that reflected itself in terms of the work of the Rambam. That's what we know in the Mishnah Torah. So the Rambam very often passes like the Rif. 99% of the time, the Rambam follows the opinions of the Rif. So you had, again, so you have this third Jewish community developing in North Africa, which definitely had ties to Spain. Then you had a fourth Jewish community that was developing in Provence. You know Provence is? It's southern France. So even though it's France, it's a very, very different part of France, geographically different and culturally different. And you had a group of Rishonim, some of the most famous ones, the Balamor and the Ravid, who came from this part of the world. So you had different Jewish communities, and many of them were involved. And as we started off before by saying the three different approaches of Torah Shabbat at this time, the Tshuva, Shalos and Tshuva's literature, the Perushim on the Gemara, the Sifrei Halacha. So you had in each one of these Jewish different communities developing their own different these areas. There were some interplay between them, not tremendous amount, but even the Balei Tosfos did see the Rambam, at least the later Balei Tosfos did see some of the works of the Rambam. The Balei Tosfos quote the Rambam in one place. Anyone have any idea? Key is trivia. There's a Gemara, it tells in Menachos, Nachman Beis, that quotes the Rambam, says with an emotion, Rambam says such and such. But the Balei Tosfos generally didn't quote the Rambam. What you started to have, though, was that the Balei Tosfos started to develop, in a sense, a new Derech HaLimud, which really caught on, spread like wildfire, really throughout the world. And that was that what the Balei Tosfos did to the Gemara is pretty much what the Amoraim did to the Mishnah. Remember we spoke about yesterday that the Mishnah was very, very concise, gave you one statement, and you don't really understand that statement in light of other statements. There's another Mishnah that contradicts it, there's a Braise that contradicts it, the Taras Kohanim contradicts it, this one holds this one, this one holds that one. So the Gemara was all trying to figure out, to look. The Gemara made the Mishnah into one unit, rather than a Mishnah here, a Mishnah there, a Mishnah there, a Braise there, a Braise there, a Tosefta there. So the Gemara's job, the Amoraim felt that their major task was to show the picture of Tershav of that as one, and to try to show what it's not a contradiction, or if there is a contradiction, it's machlokas, what the reason of machlokas, etc. So what the Amoraim did to the Mishnah, basically the Balei Tosef began to do to the Gemara. Rashi didn't do that much. Rashi was pretty much a perush on the Gemara. The Rambam didn't do that either. The Rambam was pretty much a sefer halacha, but the Balei Tosef, besides being a perush on the Gemara, were more than just a perush on the Gemara. They really, if you look at any given Tosfos, so when Tosfos is learning a sugya in Bav Metzia, they're not just looking at Bav Metzia. They're looking at Bav Metzia in light of a Gemara in Kiddushin, in light of a Gemara in Shabbos, in light of a Gemara in Chul, in light of a Gemara in Erevin, etc. All of Shas was open to the Balei Tosfos. In the period of one of the Balei Tosfos, they actually, in his yeshiva, in the Ri's yeshiva, they divided up Shas. And different Tamidim were given expertise in different Masechtas. So one guy was given, okay, your job is to go learn Babetzia, and tomorrow should come a Mumcha and Baki and all Babetzia. Your job is all Masechtas Chulin. And then they would all get together, and now the Kimamish asked, and the Talmud who knew Babetzia called, he would ask, he would say what it says in Babetzia. And the Talmud who knew Kedushin called, he would be able to give his insight. And then they were able to somehow, work together to be able to come up with the Kashas and the Terutz of all the Kedushin and the Balei Tosfos. So that idea of question, answer, question, and answer back and forth, so that although it existed a little bit beforehand, was really, really the hallmark of the Balei Tosfos. And that style of learning, that Derech HaLimud, really was picked up by the later Rishonim as well. So we find that in the Ramban, and in the Rashba, and the Ritva, and the Ran, the Chachmei Sfar, they eventually also pick up that similar style. Yeah, the later Rishonim in Svara, let's say the Rashba, the Ritva, the Ran, they all have the Balei Tosfos, and they quote the Balei Tosfos, they quote them all the time. But there were many, many different Tosfos that were written. We sometimes, when we're young, we think Tosfos was a person. Rashi was a person, there was Rabbi Tosfos. There was no Rabbi Tosfos. Tosfos was hundreds of people. It's all that whole period of the couple hundred years of French and German and other Tamil Chachamim was the period of the Balei Tosfos. So there were a lot of them. There were different Tosim written on different Masechtas. The Tosim that we have were one version. The Tosim that we have in our Gemara, in our Gemara, was one set of Tosim that was put together. But as you know, just from learning, you see there's a Tosim of Rosh, there's a Tosim of Beinu Peretz, there are Tosim of Shans, there are other versions of the Balei Tosfos, which sometimes you have similar questions, sometimes you have similar answers, sometimes you have slightly different nuances of questions and answers. So sometimes, like let's say you'll read a Rosh, but the Rosh will say, Hikshua Tosfos, and you look in Tosfos on the page, you don't see it. There's no such Tosfos. So the answer is that the Rashba wasn't necessarily referring to the Tosfos that's printed in the Shas, Vilna, printed in the Sadi Yod Gemara on the third line. Tosfos, they were referring to the Rashba, a different set of Tosfos which were written by another group of the Balei Tosfos. So again, the Balei Tosfos were varied, but there were definitely similarities in terms of the styles. Pretty much the same questions were asked, pretty much similar terutzim were given.
So are really in the back of the Mara, is it like Tosfos Shans and
Tosfos? But so those are other versions that all at the same time, the same way, you have the Mishnah, the Braise, the Tosefta, so you had in the Balei Tosfos also the different Rishonim were writing different
Kashas. Is that the same, like, Balei Tosfos
and everything? Yeah, so the Tosfos Shans is from the Rash Mishans. So the Rash was one of the famous Balei Tosfos.
And there's like other stuff
on. Yeah, you have the Tosfos in the Peretz, the Tosfos Shans, you have the Tosfos Rash, you have a few
sort of. How do they decide, like, which one goes?
Who is the one who was Kaveh? Which tells him going to the side of the Gemara? Not sure who made that final call.
Wasn't, like, the reason why Rashi and Tosfos, like, are so.
Oh, why they're on the page?
Because they wrote it through Isurim and stuff.
I don't know. The reason why Rashi tells, anyone know, by the way, who decided the layout for the page?
Bamrig,
that the layout for the page and having the Gemara in the middle, Rashi, Rashi in the inner part, and Tosfos in the outer part was decided.